Good morning, everyone. I hereby call this meeting of the Michigan State University Board of Trustees to order. Our first order of business is approval of the proposed agenda. Could I have a motion?
So moved.
Support.
Thank you. Any discussion? Hearing none, the motion is approved. Our next order of business is approval of the minutes from April 22, 2022.
So moved.
Thank you. Is there a second?
Support.
Thank you. Any discussion? Hearing none, the motion is approved. We will now move to public participation. Board Secretary.
Thank you. We will now proceed to the public participation portion of the meeting. Each individual who has signed up to speak will have 3 minutes to address the board. Your time will end when the buzzer sounds. Any responses from board members will come during the trustee comment portion of the meeting. We will now hear from Kyle Rogenbuck, followed by Mary McClellan Lamb.
I'm Kyle Rogenbuck, class of 83, swim and dive program, national qualifier and co-captain. On this 50th anniversary of Title IX, it is disheartening to me that opportunities for women athletes are being diminished rather than expanded. I stand on the shoulders of many women athletes who came before me. Title IX, just 37 words, changed forever the way we think about basic equality and fairness in all areas, but especially in women's athletics. I came to this university, like many others, for its superior education, which I received, but also because I wanted to swim and to compete and to find a place that would be a home for me. What I found was a place that where I could realize my potential to be a part of a family and to learn leadership, discipline, and make lifelong friendships. When I came, the university was just changing over to Title IX rules. My first quarter here, we had to swim during dinner hour because the men had the pool at the more convenient time. So we were allowed only $1.65 at the student union to pay for our meal. Women slept 4 to a room at away meets, while men 2 to a room. But none of that mattered because I had found a family. When in the middle of my junior year, after having qualified for nationals the 2 years before, I found a lump in my breast, and I was diagnosed with breast cancer. But this program gave me purpose. I was scared to death, but through swimming, I also knew that I was strong and resilient. I was back in the pool 5 weeks after my mastectomy, working toward becoming the athlete I knew was still in me. It was athletics and my teammates who saw me through that difficult time and taught me so many important life lessons. I want others to be able to experience what I found here at MSU. I want to speak up for the life-changing qualities of competitive sports at its highest level and how important it is to continue to provide those opportunities for future generations, including our daughters and our granddaughters. As a university, we want to be one that attracts the best and the brightest, and that means reinstating the MSU Women's Swim and Dive program and men's program as well. In my role as a minister, I recently have been preaching about the serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, but the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. I urge the Board of Trustees to have the courage and wisdom to do the right thing. Thank you.
Mary McClellan Lamb, followed by Mindy Arba.
Thank you. I'm also class of 83, swim and dive, and I appreciate you welcoming me today. I hope my experiences provide solid evidence of how collegiate swimming has positively impacted my life, and as an ambassador of MSU, why programs like the swim and dive should not be eliminated. I was born and raised in the Midwest and was recruited to swim at MSU. Four years of collegiate swimming instilled lifelong skills, confidence, resilience, discipline, time management, commitment. The list goes on. I was one of the first MLM graduating classes, and upon graduation, hired at Motorola. The hiring manager told me he chose my resume after seeing my experience as a varsity swimmer, saying that this rigor is what they're looking for at Motorola. It was the start of a long and successful career spanning several decades and continents. My husband, also an MSU grad, and I took jobs in Japan and then Hong Kong, where we resided for 30 years, repatriating just 2 months ago back to Western Michigan. Throughout the years raising a family abroad, I became passionate about development of youth and sports. As president of the swim team for 10 years, followed by another decade on the International School Board of Managers, I gained particular insight into student development and success. Still an active competitive athlete, I understand that athletics creates disciplined, dedicated human beings and leaders well beyond their sport. All three of my children became four-year Division I varsity athletes. My eldest, also a swimmer, competed at Duke. Matriculating from Hong Kong, she had the choice and perspective of the entire United States, if not world, for which to consider tertiary education. We visited many schools, including MSU. She even attended a swim camp here. Unfortunately, MSU's facilities paled in comparison to other Big Ten and elite schools, and she chose Duke. My other two were varsity rowers, one at Princeton, the other at the United States Naval Academy. Being a student athlete at Duke is a fantastic experience. It's cool to be academic and athletic. Swimmers are consistently high academic achievers, and Duke offers a program called CAPE, which is for collegiate athletic pre-medical experience for female student athletes who wish to pursue a career in medicine. CAPE is rooted in evidence that women athletes are high achieving, goal-oriented, and focused, and they make good doctors. My daughter was accepted in the program, and she's now a third year at MSU's Medical School in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Competitive swimming is grueling. It fosters grit and resilience, traits our world needs now more than ever. MSU Swim and Dive programs develops leaders, strong and high-valued human beings, parents, and future ambassadors. It attracts strong students who make a difference in our world. If MSU continues to eliminate this program, they'll be missing out on these opportunities. Thank you.
Mindy Arbaugh, followed by Sophia Bello.
Thank you, Board of Trustees. I am here today to speak on behalf of Marilyn Corson Whitney, class of 72 and 74, who has asked me to read her speech at the 50th anniversary of Women in Swimming about her experiences at MSU before Title IX. Title IX passed in 1972, just as I had finished my swimming career at MSU. In January of 1969, I was one of three women arriving on campus with Olympic medals for swimming in our pockets. Linda Gustafson and Pam Cruz had both won gold and silver medals from Mexico City, and I had a bronze. Although we swam for MSU, we were not considered athletes at the school, only because we were female. Comparing the swimming programs at that time, we had a club and the men had a team, which was sponsored by the university and had a professional coach. We swam 4 hours a week. They swam 4 hours a day. It was illegal for women to have scholarships for sports. Of course, the men had scholarships. I think that on road trips, MSU provided a van. I remember one cold February weekend, Coach Bartsch driving a van full of young women across the frigid plains of Iowa to the Big Ten Championships. What fortitude, Coach Bartsch. We usually stayed in people's houses. The one time we stayed in a hotel, it was four people to a room. During my time at MSU, I won a national championship in the 200 individual medley, 9 Big Ten championships, and was an All-American all 3 years I swam for MSU. In 1972, our team was fifth at the DGWS Nationals, as women could not compete in the NCAA. The MSU newspaper reported our success with a 4x5-inch article. In 1970, I decided to try to make the Canadian Olympic team again. Jane Waldie and I went to Coach Fetters and asked if we could swim with the men's team in the morning. Then we swam with the women's team in the afternoon. Coach Fetters was great, but you know what? The men Jane and I were swimming with, not so much. We were in the men's pool, in their territory, and they did not like it. We swam with them every morning for 2 years, and yet they could not bring themselves to say good morning. At that time, we did not expect equal treatment. It was what it was, and we just got on with it. We persevered and represented our school to the best of our abilities. By the way, I did make the 1972 Canadian Olympic team and competed in the semifinals in the 100 butterfly and was seventh in the medley relay. I found out recently that I was among 5 Spartan swimmers selected in the top 1,000 college swimmers of all time, yet I am still waiting for my MSU Hall of Fame invitation. But the struggle for recognition continues. For example, it took the powers that be at Michigan State 30 years to recognize the contributions of MSU's women athletes before Title IX. It wasn't until 2002 that I and 700 other women athletes received their athletic letters. To the current team, keep standing up for yourself by representing your gender as well as your school. You make us all proud. To the trustees, we fought long and hard to be considered equal to our male counterparts by giving our school our best efforts, even if the school did not recognize our excellence. Please reinstate the swimming program at MSU as a way of demonstrating that female athletes have a place at Michigan State University. Thank you for letting me share a little of my experience as a competitive swimmer at MSU. Go Green. Thank you.
Vicki White, followed by Kate Birdsall.
Okay, first I have to tell you I'm extremely nervous. I am Vicki Lefevre White. I graduated in the class of 1979, so that makes me kind of an old lady. But my perspective's a little bit different than, not different than the women that spoke, but my son Blair White played football for Michigan State University. So he graduated 12 years ago. And I had a different perspective. Swimming at Michigan State University, we would take station wagons to swim meets where the back seats turned around, and all of a sudden my son's playing football at Michigan State University, and I found myself in a different position. And I understand the difference in revenue-generating sports, and which obviously swimming is not, but I still think there's a very valuable place for women swimming at Michigan State University. So I'd just like to start with the story. When Blair played, the two things I always did when we went to away football games is I always ran to greet the buses coming in, no matter where the parents, Spartan parents were. It was a mile away, 2 miles away, because I wanted to be part of that proud Michigan State Spartans. So when you see the buses coming in, you see the fire or the sirens, and they're escorting them in. And I always watched and thought to myself, I'm one of them. I'm a Spartan athlete. That makes me so special, just like those men are getting off that bus. And the second thing I did is I still work out at the Y, I always went to the Y and made sure that I always wore my Michigan State swim cap because it generated all kinds of conversation, and I was very proud of that. And lately, I haven't done that because the next time I did that, I had someone ask me, so tell me about Michigan State swimming. I could tell them about my era, but I couldn't tell them about this era. So my plea to you today is there are lots of very wonderful things that women accomplish when they learn to become strong, athletic parents that they can pass down to their children. I'm graduated with one of five brothers and sisters, and I also have four children that graduate from Michigan State University, and I just want to continue to be a proud Spartan athlete. So if you'll consider reinstating the swim program, that would be wonderful. Thank you for your time.
Kate Birdsall, followed by Michael Balow.
Morning. Before the start of our contract negotiations this spring, I stood here and asked this administration to stand by the commitments made in the university's 2030 strategic plan. And the contract we negotiated with MSU's bargaining team goes a long way toward honoring those commitments. And we're very happy with the relationships we've built with the offices of faculty and staff affairs, employee relations, and several colleges across campus. The Union of Non-Tenure Track Faculty, or UNTF, which I represent as its president and lead negotiator, believes this contract represents a major step forward by the university. For the first time, teaching-focused faculty can rest assured, knowing that we have a real career path available to us at Michigan State, that we are, in the words of Provost Woodruff, visible, valuable, and valued. The reforms we negotiated to salary, promotion, and performance review policies represent a real commitment to and investment in our educators. Importantly, we would not have been able to come together on these issues were it not for the commitment to problem solving brought to the negotiations by both parties. UNTF believes that although labor unions can and will become adversarial if necessary, we accomplish much more by working together, and the university's bargaining team showed genuine willingness to work with us in this contract cycle. To that point, A continued commitment to constructive and creative problem solving lies at the heart of this agreement, and I look forward to continuing this work throughout the life of our 22 to 26 collective bargaining agreement. As Michigan State moves forward into a future redefined by the COVID pandemic, MSU 2.0, as it were, it's absolutely imperative that it work to develop such strong relationships with all of its faculty, staff, and students. And we are heartened, even optimistic, about the future. Thank you for your time, and I hope you all have a wonderful summer.
Michael Bailo, followed by Poncella Hardaway.
Good morning, everybody. It's nice to be here again, it seems, for the umpteenth time. Maybe this will be the last time I get to address you from this side of the table, at least. Today is unbelievably the 14th meeting over 20 months where you've heard from probably 50 different people who are upset with the elimination of the swim and dive program. In that time, President Stanley, Athletic Director Haller, for some reason, you've steadfastly refused to have a collaborative meeting to explain the original reasons which remain opaque, or to hear the very good reasons why you should reverse course. What conclusion can I draw from this? Are we afraid of the truth? Are we afraid to get in a room and collaborate as men and women of good faith? When we talked briefly up on Mackinac Island, I got the impression that maybe after you met with the kids, that the broader battle group could get together and try to solve this problem collaboratively. Because believe me, if there's an intractable problem, I would go away and the other members of the battle group would go away. So I'm asking you right now, will you commit to meeting with members of the battle group that has been asked of you by the trustees and which we've been promised many months ago? That's not a rhetorical question. I'm looking for an answer from you today. Will you give it?
Don't really respond to the public comment.
Of course. I'll stick around until after the meeting is finished. I appreciate you taking the time to meet with the four student athletes, but let's be honest with ourselves. It was the alumni and the parents and the student athletes together at the broader battle group that put the proposal together that has $10 million on the table right now for this program. Real dollars are on the table. There is a new Big Ten TV contract that's about to be signed to take MSU's share of the TV revenue from about $42 to $72 million. I'm sure we can find the $2 million for swim and dive if we get together in the room. To date, you spent well over $400,000 that we know of on the Title IX lawsuit. And if and when you lose it, you're going to be liable for plaintiffs' legal fees and millions more. This is a rabbit hole that I don't think MSU should be going down. And Mr. Quinn, if it was your money, I don't think you'd be so cavalier in spending it that way. And I'm sorry to be so blunt, but I've been doing this for a long time, and I don't appreciate the 50 or so emails I've sent to this administration that have gone without an answer. Recent reports in the USA Today have focused on schools like MSU who have played games with the Title IX numbers. I give you the Detroit News on page 1A of this morning, where you're the featured article. Not a good look for MSU. So here we are on the 50th anniversary. And you had the gall yesterday to release a video celebrating Michigan State's history in Title IX. All I can say is that if I'm fortunate enough to be elected as a trustee of this fine school, these games will stop, the truth won't be hidden anymore, and the students will have an advocate in me for doing what is right. I'm begging of you all right now to review the presentation that we gave you and engage as men and women of goodwill. That's what Spartans do.
Poncella Hardaway.
Good morning. My name is Poncella Hardaway. I'm the director of Moses Action. Good morning to all the Michigan State Board of Trustees. My colleagues and I, which are behind me, are part of the Defend Black Voters Coalition. Appreciate the opportunity Michigan State provides for the voices for the community to be heard in matters important to us and the leadership of MSU. Moses Action is a core goals to promote increased voter participation among people of color, low-income individuals, and other historically marginalized groups. We activate hundreds of volunteers across the state through a network of member congregations. The volunteers conduct outreach to thousands of Michigan residents, empowering them to personal values and priorities. The goal of the goal, our core goal, is what led us to found the member of coalition called Defend Black Voters. Michigan State University serves the state of Michigan, home of the third largest black majority city in the country, Detroit. And we know you take the civil rights of our community seriously. In 2020, black and brown and working class people across the country showed up to the polls in force, especially here in Detroit. We asserted our voices and changed the outcome of the election. Now we're faced with a reaction, a thinly veiled ploy to make it harder for black and brown working class people to vote. That ploy is called Secure My Vote. This effort could be passed into law by the end of the year. The stakes couldn't be higher. If black voters in Detroit have a harder time voting, the ramifications are national, and the architects of the voter suppression efforts know it. Blue Cross Blue Shield and Delta Dental of Michigan have been using taxpayer and tuition dollars through their contracts with Michigan State University to bankroll the legislators behind the effort. At this critical moment, silence is complicity, and we're asking the Board of Governors to take a bold stand to hold these companies accountable, to align their actions with their own professed values and those of Michigan State University. Defend Black Voters is a multiracial coalition with a shared value that must build democracy in which everyone, regardless of race, gender, income, has the right and equal say in what happens in our communities. We know that Michigan State shares many of these same goals, both within Michigan State University community, but also instilling these values into your students that go on to careers here in our communities in Michigan and elsewhere. Ironically, Blue Cross Blue Shield and Delta Dental issued strong racial statements, and Blue Cross Blue Shield CEO signed a joint statement against the voter suppression. Okay, so we're asking that you actually support us against this issue around voter suppression in Michigan. Thank you.
That's all the public comment.
Thank you. I want to start by thanking all of those who spoke this morning. Before I get into my report, I want to take note of the passing of a much-loved Spartan, former MSU First Lady Joanne McPherson, spouse of MSU's 19th president, Peter McPherson, has passed away. Peter was president from 1993 to 2005, and this year is completing his term as president of the Association of Public and Land-Grant Universities. Joanne was a remarkable woman whose loss will be felt deeply in our university community and beyond. She and Peter both welcomed and supported me when I came to Michigan State, and she continued to support the university they both loved through generous giving and engagement. She might best be remembered as the guiding spirit behind creation of the MSU Safe Place in 1994. It was the first university-based shelter where students, staff, faculty, and their partners experienced abusive relationships could find refuge and support. More recently, the McPhersons made a $50,000 challenge gift to create an endowment to support MSU's Safe Place to commemorate its 25th anniversary. Joanne was an active partner to Peter in his years here, hosting gatherings at Cole's house and traveling the country to work with alumni groups, and she will be missed by many. I want to send my and the university community's deep condolences to Peter and his family. To begin my report, I want to acknowledge the Board of Trustees for all of the work you did this week at our annual retreat and planning sessions. I think we have much to look forward to as we pursue the university's strategic vision of expanding our excellence and impact. As we discussed this week, our colleges and units are working diligently to engage stakeholders and communities across the university to integrate the strategic plan's priorities into their own planning. Provost Woodruff has engaged hundreds of faculty, academic staff, and administrators in summits and work sessions. MSU Health Sciences is reaching out across the university for ideas that support sustainable health and wellness on campus and in the communities MSU serves. And MSU's administrative services have continued its inclusive planning, including a survey about how our facilities and land use can strengthen equity and community health and support our people. Student success, as you know, is the first of our strategic priorities. And I'm proud of our progress towards an 86% graduation rate, currently at a record high 82%. I want to thank everyone who joined me at graduation ceremonies in May to celebrate the success of 9,600 Spartan scholars. For those who've dedicated our lives to education, it is immensely gratifying to see our proud graduates carry the knowledge and skills they've gained here into the next chapter of their lives. As a reminder that our student success work extends beyond our degree programs, I'll be in Detroit next week to salute another group of graduates, the inaugural class of the Apple Developer Academy. In my tours there, I've been impressed by the diversity of the students I've met, which is a key consideration both for Apple and MSU in extending this opportunity. We have a mother-son pair completing the program this month, and she has told us how much the program has boosted her own confidence and self-esteem, in addition to giving her new skills to take her career in a new direction. And I was delighted to learn that one of the students I met last fall will join our College of Engineering this year, starting his Spartan journey with in-demand coding and other skills already in hand. Of course, our progress in preparing students for postgraduate success is underpinned by MSU's excellent faculty and staff. And I was pleased to join MSU leaders to salute many of their accomplishments at the All-University Award Ceremony in May. To foster an environment in which staff and faculty can do their best work, we're continuing our efforts to become a workplace of choice. MSU Human Resources, for example, has worked to serve all our employees by launching new policies around flexible and remote work arrangements. A committee convened by MSU Human Resources and the Office for Faculty and Academic Staff Affairs has compiled preliminary recommendations aimed at addressing how MSU can establish an exemplary caregiver program to support all of our employees. And as referenced in the comments, a new agreement with the Union for Non-Tenure Faculty was ratified by both parties. This agreement is the outcome of a successful collaboration between us and a testimony to the university's commitment to faculty success. And I'm very pleased in the budget that's proposed today, there would be a 5% merit-based pay increase for our non-union faculty and academic staff members in the coming year, plus a 1.5% increase for excellence and equity adjustments. Our pay adjustments represent investments in our faculty members' success and recognition for their excellence and hard work. Finally, it was my honor to introduce Provost Woodruff last week at a gathering to celebrate this year's Michigan ACE Network Distinguished Women in Higher Education Leadership Award winners. As I said in my nominating letter, MSU has been well served by Dr. Woodruff's strong and consistent leadership during an unprecedented and challenging time, and she was highly deserving of such recognition by her statewide colleagues in higher education. Just as we're advancing faculty and staff success, so too are we moving forward with our strategic commitment to sustainable health. For example, we recently installed the state's first total body CT PET scanner at the MSU Radiopharmacy at the Doug Meyer Medical Innovation Building in Grand Rapids. It can take full body scans in as little as 60 seconds. And in July, our partner, that excites me, 60 seconds. And in July, our partner, BAMF Health, will begin using it to help treat patients with prostate cancer and neuroendocrine tumors. In another private-public partnership supporting sustainable health, I was honored to join our partners from Henry Ford recently to celebrate a $5 million gift from Ron and Heather Bogey. The gift will help fund the new Health Sciences Center for our joint medical research programs. Medicine will no doubt be a big part of our strategic drive to reach $1 billion in research outlays by 2030. So too will the recent opening of the facility for rare isotope beams, which will expand our understanding of the universe and advance practical applications in sectors such as medicine and industry. I'm grateful to all those who contributed to EFRIB's development, and I'm confident it will solidify our position as a leader in nuclear physics education as it opens new and promising areas of discovery. Meanwhile, we underscored our commitment to transdisciplinary research with April's campus convening on climate change, which involved 160 leaders, faculty, staff, and students. On the subject of sustainability, we've already achieved some of our objectives. The Times Higher Education Impact Rankings, for example, placed MSU at number 33 in the world for progress towards United Nations Sustainable Development Goals. That ranking exceeds our original goal of simply placing in the top 100. I'm also proud that for the second time, MSU earned a gold rating from the Association for the Advancement of Sustainability in Higher Education. A rating score places us at number one in the state for sustainability. And our research and operations continue to contribute to a greener future, from our new and operational electric autonomous bus to our plan to grow our electric vehicle fleet by 369 vehicles. I want to add that the fiscal 2022-23 budget you consider adopting today, Board of Trustees, is another expression of financial stewardship. This inaugural all-funds budget is an important step towards a comprehensive financial model that supports Michigan State's strategic plans. I can't think of a more thoughtful and joyful way to represent our commitment to diversity, equity, and inclusion than last week's Juneteenth celebration at Breslin Center. I want to thank the Office of Institutional Diversity and Inclusion for coordinating the event led by Dr. Jabbar Bennett, and thank you, Trustee Kanaki Jefferson and Trustee Vassar, for adding your voices to the program. I also appreciate the work of our Gender and Sexuality Campus Center, Women's Student Services, and the other units that organized the 5K event Saturday to support the Unconditional Love Fund during Pride Month. The fund supports students facing financial hardship as a consequence of sex or gender-related issues. As I said at the event, the fund is another affirmation of MSU's commitment to fostering belonging for all people of all genders and all sexual identities. Finally, I'm very proud that MSU economist Lisa Cook won her confirmation to the Federal Reserve System Board of Governors. Dr. Cook is the first black woman to have a seat on that board. I'm certain her scholarship and perspective will prove invaluable as the Fed considers the impact of its decisions on all Americans. It's true that much remains to be done to meet MSU's strategic goals by 2030, but I'm excited by our progress and proud of our community's commitment to building a better tomorrow. Before I wrap up, I want to reiterate what makes MSU excellent, and that's its people. Indeed, we are where we are with our strategic plan thanks to the excellence and dedication of many staff, faculty, and leaders, some of whom we say goodbye to at this meeting. One is our Vice President and Strategic Director for University Communications, Mary Jo Bale. Mary Jo brought her deep experience to her alma mater more than 3 years ago at a particularly challenging time. She stayed beyond her initial term of engagement to help us navigate the COVID-19 pandemic. She is returning in August to her interrupted retirement with my thanks, and I know that of the board. We also have to say goodbye to Dean of Libraries and Interim Associate Provost for Teaching, Learning, and Innovation, Joseph Salem. In addition to leading the strategic planning work for the libraries and a reorganization focused on DEI and faculty and student engagement, he also co-chaired with Vennie Gore, the University's Strategic Planning Steering Committee. I want to thank Joe Salem for all of his work for the libraries and the university during the 4 years he spent with us. Terry Miller, Associate Dean for Teaching, Learning, and Research Engagement in MSU Libraries, has been recommended by Provost Woodruff as Interim Dean of the MSU Libraries, pending your approval. I also want to recognize Mike Brand, who after 18 years as Executive Director of the Wharton Center for the Performing Arts, has left the stage. Under Mike's leadership, the Wharton Center has significantly grown attendance, the diversity of its programming, and avenues of outreach to the community. I know you join me in wishing Mike well, because I think he would agree the show must go on. This week, we welcome the Wharton Center's new Executive Director, Eric Olmscheid. Eric is an experienced and engaged performing arts executive, and I look forward to the Wharton Center's continued success under his leadership. We have good news for MSU and our student athletes with the appointment of new coaches for ice hockey, softball, and men's tennis. Adam Nightingale is our new hockey coach, joining MSU after 2 seasons as head coach at the United States National Team Development Program, as well as 4 years' experience on NHL staffs, including with the Detroit Red Wings. As a Spartan student athlete, he was alternate captain for 2 years. Sharonda McDonald Kelly will bring her Women's College World Series experience to MSU as head softball coach. She was a 4-time Big 12 All-Selection at Texas A&M and steps into the large cleats of Jackie Joseph, who led the Spartans for 29 seasons. And Harry J. Dunn is the new coach of men's tennis, becoming the 9th head coach with the retirement of Coach Gene Orlando after 31 years. Henry's been assistant coach for the team for the last 5 years and is a former Spartan All-American. And I personally just want to say my congratulations to Gene Orlando on his retirement. It's hard to find a more dedicated champion to men's tennis than Gene Orlando. I want to send my best wishes to all of our new coaches. And before I conclude today, I want to congratulate Trustee Vassar on her appointment by Governor Whitmer to the Michigan Science, Technology, Engineering, and Mathematics Education Advisory Council. The council recommends ways to ensure effective communications, collaboration, and joint objectives among state offices that deal with STEM education, and I know she will be an effective and engaged member. And with that, I'll proceed to the rest of the agenda. We will now move to the gift and grant contract report for Vice President for Research and Innovation, Doug Gage.
Good morning. Chairperson Byram, members of the Board of Trustees, I request approval of the awards found in the gift, grant, and contract report. The report period is from March 24th, 2022 through May 27th, 2022. The total value of this period is $124,731,154.
Could I have a motion to approve?
So moved.
Thank you. Second?
Support.
Thank you. All those, any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? The motion carries. Doug, will you please go ahead and introduce our speaker today?
Great. It is a great pleasure to present today an opportunity that is arising because of the opening of FRIB. This is something that we celebrated recently, and I want to show you today just the things that will come out of FRIB as we proceed. So Kurt Zinn, DVM, MS, PhD, was recruited to the new Institute of Quantitative Health Sciences and Engineering in August of 2017 under the Global Impact Initiative. He is a professor of radiology, biomedical engineering, and small animal clinical sciences, with appointments in the colleges of engineering, human medicine, and veterinary medicine. Dr. Zinn completed his undergraduate studies in chemistry at the University of Missouri Columbia, followed by a veterinary medicine degree and graduate education at UMC, where he earned MS in chemistry and a PhD in biochemistry. He joined the University of Alabama at Birmingham radiology faculty in 1995 after 9 years as a scientist at the University of Missouri Research Reactor, the highest flux research reactor in the U.S. As a professor of radiology at UAB from 2003 to 2017, he also served as director of the Radiology's Division of Advanced Medical Imaging Research from 2009 to 2017, and vice chair of translational research from 2015 through 2017. A Distinguished Investigator Award was presented to Dr. Zinn in 2015 by the Academy of Radiology Research. His research includes the development of molecular imaging approaches for cancer diagnosis, treatment monitoring, and therapy. Dr. Zinn has contributed significantly to more than 10 phase 1 clinical trials. This morning you'll be hearing more about his research being conducted in his lab, how his team is leveraging the assets of the Facility for Rare Isotope Beams, and the connections he's making to our health care partners across the state. Please welcome Dr. Zinn.
Well, thank you so much for that kind introduction, and I want to thank the MSU leadership and the Board of Trustees for the opportunity to talk about my research today. I really appreciate that. I came here almost 5 years ago, attracted here because of the new Institute of Quantitative Health Science and Engineering, an interdisciplinary institute, but also because of the FRIB that was going to be opening eventually, and also because of veterinary medicine, my interest in clinical trials and companion animals for testing. And I'm blessed, really, to be here and to have such fine students that are interested in pushing this program forward. And the students like to keep it interesting. They're really interested in not just the science, but how we can communicate better the science to the public. So one of the things we did in our lab recently was we had a competition to come up with some science haikus that, you know, are Japanese poetry, 17 syllables. And it was amazing what the students came up with. And I'm sharing two of those poems on the title side here. And I really like the one on the left that says, "Can't hear, smell, or see, radioactivity makes the unseen seen." And that's by one of my PhD students in biomedical engineering, Kylie Smith. So, what is radioactivity? And I'm not able to advance, so. You could just move it. Thank you. An element is defined by the number of protons, but they can have variable neutrons. And so when they aren't stable, they're radioactive, and they decay to something that is stable. Examples that we use in imaging are shown here. They release gamma rays, and it's the gamma rays that we detect with our imaging instruments, things like Tech-99m, F-18, you've probably heard of. The 18 refers to the number of total protons and neutrons. So in this case, there's 9 protons making it fluoride, and then 9 neutrons. For the therapeutic radionuclides, you've probably heard of I-131 for iodine therapy for thyroid cancer, or cobalt-60, something like that. They emit particles that deliver high radiation doses. So we use these materials in biomedical research. Now, believe it or not, we are all radioactive. We have natural radioactivity in us, potassium 40, carbon 14, which is produced in the upper atmosphere. We're all naturally radioactive. And we also try to avoid radioactivity. A lot of us have radon remediation systems in our basements. We don't want to breathe that radon gas that comes from decaying uranium in the soil. So these are examples. Most radioactivity and radioisotopes come from something like a research reactor, and this is the University of Missouri Research Reactor. We're looking at the core from above through 25 feet of water for shielding. But they're coming from reactors or from cyclotrons and now also from the F-rib. So could I have the next slide, please? Oh, I'm able to advance now, I think. At the center of what we do is the radioisotope, and it's the raw material. We convert that raw material into a compound, an imaging agent, and we have really a molecular imaging and therapy toolkit, so we can pick and choose which tool that we use to interrogate the biology. And the way that that works is that we first test it in vitro, in cells, and culture. We then move to preclinical models in rodents. You probably know something about our imaging systems and the IQ. They're really advanced. And we also need larger animals for parts of our research. And we've been lucky to and fortunate to get funding from NIH for a center of excellence for large animal imaging, one of the only places in the world to be able to do this. Eventually, we do our imaging in humans because we want to improve the health of humans for detection of disease or for therapeutic intervention. So this is sort of the scope of what we're doing. The radiopharmaceutical agent itself, as I mentioned, has that raw material, the radioisotope. It's bound with a chelator, which is just a compound that holds it to the targeting molecule tightly. And the targeting molecule is really what seeks out, in this case, the cancer, and unlocks it so that we can find it and that we can treat it. And the isotope helps us with that because it emits those gamma rays or those particles that can deliver radiation therapy. And so that's what we do. We develop imaging agents and therapeutic agents for clinical trials. Here's an example of an imaging agent called FDG, fluorodeoxyglucose. Through our partner at Cardinal Health here at MSU, we make about 38,000 doses of this every year, and we distribute to the whole state of Michigan. And this is used for identifying cancer throughout the body. You know, the hot spots that show up here on the arrows are where cancer has metastasized. And it helps us to understand, you know, how advanced the disease is, and it changes how we treat the disease if it has metastasized. And the only difference between FDG and regular glucose is that fluorine 18, which is produced in the cyclotron, and it's emitting gamma rays that we detect when cancer metabolizes that radioactive glucose. And the reason it does is it needs it for energy. So it has a higher energy metabolism than the surrounding normal tissues. This is my vision for innovation using the resources here at MSU, the unique resources, the FRIB for the basic research and the availability of the radioisotopes. We have many departments working basic research in cancer, and we're filling in the gaps now to be able to do translational work. I submitted an idea called Advancing Radiopharmaceutical Targeting as part of the strategic plan, the sustainable health pillar. And this is what I envision using the raw isotopes. We need to be able to manufacture drugs that we can administer to humans, and we do that in the new radiopharmacy. We have all the preclinical imaging capabilities, and then with this recent CO6 grant, we're building a new center of excellence that'll help us with the translation. And of course, what we're doing is we're driving this towards testing with our partners at Henry Ford and Spectrum, and also in Grand Rapids. I'm going to use the BAMP facility to produce a drug for bladder cancer with a urologist at Spectrum. We're doing a phase one study there. So we take advantage of all the resources that we have. This is a picture of the radiopharmacy in the basement of the radiology building adjacent to the two medical cyclotrons there where FDG is produced. This is a small facility, a training facility, where we can make human doses, but where we can also train students. There's a shortage of trained people to be able to handle radioisotopes and to be able to do these projects. So we're training the next generation. That's really the best that I can do now, not only do the clinical trials, but train the people who will replace me when I am no longer able to continue the work. This facility is a small facility. It's complementary to what has been built in Grand Rapids in the Doug Meyer Innovation Building. And we plan on using both and using the new imaging equipment, the whole body PET that Dr. Stanley mentioned in his earlier statements. This is a module, a synthesis module, where we convert that raw radioisotope into a final product, a compound that we can use in humans. Each one of these glass vials can be a reaction, a compound for a reaction, and we can do multiple reactions and purification steps all behind 4 inches of lead shielding so that we can do it in a safe way and in a controlled environment. So here's the pipeline that I'm working on. This is me trying to get clinical trials done. I'm in the trenches working, trying to get the toxicology done, trying to get the FDA approvals to move forward. We have a new first-in-class antibody that targets tumor endothelium and is pumped into tumors, and that is great for delivering isotopes for imaging and therapy. We have this funded trial with Dr. Lane for bladder cancer, and then we're working on eventual future trials for ovarian cancer and for other solid tumors like breast cancer. I wanted to share a little bit of data. This is a mouse with ovarian cancer that did not receive treatment. It's one of the top lines here, the red line, and you can see from the time the study started till 60 days later, the tumor increased from 100% to about 2,000, about a factor of 20 in growth, and it spread throughout the whole peritoneal cavity of the mouse. We're imaging with the firefly luciferase. It's light from a lightning bug gene that we cloned and put into the cancer cell. So we detect the cancer by the light that's emitted. And really the importance here is the third group, the green group, the money group, the targeted antibody that prevented the cancer from growing. And that's the bottom line. It's a flat line. And that's what I want to show in this slide. The tumor's almost gone in this example mouse from two treatments with this radioisotope that emits alpha particles. And this is a collaboration with NIOWAVE, a local company that makes radioisotopes as well. We got started because FRIB's not quite ready to deliver and harvest the isotopes they just opened. So this graph shows each individual mouse and how we image them every week to look at how the tumors are growing. And you can see that some of the tumors went down by a factor of 100 or a factor of 10 or stayed constant. It's variable. We didn't cure all the animals, but what we did was have a really good response. And what we're trying to do in the future is to combine this with immunotherapies and to really train the immune system to be able to respond to the cancer and eliminate it when the cancer comes back. So that's the real excitement for me, is the future where we can use radiation therapy with radioisotopes with immune therapy and then get a systemic immune response to protect the recurrence of cancer for the future. In other studies, we're working on new ways to image waste clearance from the brain as part of Alzheimer's disease, and we work with strategies to improve red blood cell storage and also type 1 diabetes. We have a clinical trial plan that's supported by the Helmsley Foundation. So it's not just cancer, it's multiple other types of programs that are impacted with radioisotopes. And with that, I want to introduce you to my students and postdocs, a great group, a diverse group that are really the next generation. They have these unique opportunities for training here at MSU, for bringing this for the future, and I'll take any questions that you have.
How do you train the immunosystem to respond to cancer? Is it part of the therapy, or I'm just curious how that happens?
We're interested in the alpha particle therapy, where we can give repeated therapies safely and we induce a lot of double-stranded DNA breaks. And when we combine that with checkpoint inhibitors, basically we use that's the immunotherapy. We can set up the immune system to respond to the actual cancer. And then, you know, there's a lot of really great work just very recently that's come out that we have to fraction the dose of radiation and have those on board at the right time. So that's part of what we're working on for the future, is being able to do that.
It would appear that if you're successful, it has great application to a lot of cancers.
Oh, absolutely. And we think it can be applied to, for example, interventional procedures where we can deliver directly to the solid tumors the right dose of radiation when we have the immunotherapy on board, and then be able to really change the paradigm for how we treat cancers.
Thank you and good luck.
Thank you.
Other questions?
I just wanted to make a comment that this is incredible work, and just thank you for doing it, and thank you for doing it at MSU. We are really lucky to have you, so thank you.
Appreciate it. I have a couple of questions. We had to look up 9 words while you were talking about it. So I appreciate learning. Thank you. I do wonder, what was the last TV show you ever watched?
I watch a little bit of TV at night with my wife. It's usually driven by what my 10-year-old son wants to watch, though, honestly. So.
Okay. And then what's the last book you read?
I'm usually reading articles, so I got a book for Christmas, and I'm not quite done with it yet. I'll read a little bit, but the students keep me pretty busy. I try to be attentive to what they need, you know, for reviewing their writings and so forth, and so that's really what my focus is.
You seem pretty focused, like laser beam.
I'm thrilled to be at MSU and to have the opportunity, you know, to drive this forward, and I've been so fortunate to get these great students, and so I don't want to let them down. I have to keep working to make sure they're advancing.
So my final question is around the lightning bugs. You said you took a gene from the lightning bug to create the imaging. Tell me what happened.
Well, we use this luciferase, it's called. It's what makes the lightning bugs give off their light. We put that in the cancer cells, and then we can detect where the cancer cells are located because of the light that's given off. And it's a technique that is very efficient. So we image 5 mice at a time, and it takes about 3 or 4 seconds to collect the image for all 5 mice, and we can analyze them and just repeatedly image them over time. And the pioneer for this is actually the person who developed the machinery and everything, is Chris Kontag. He started the company, Xenogen, that marketed these devices, and he's here at MSU. He's the director of IQ. So he started it, and it's taken off. Every lab essentially in the world doing this kind of research has this device.
Oh my. Yeah, so I just appreciate all of your work, and that I know a little bit more about EFRIB. I think all of us have toured that facility, and it's amazing, but I didn't understand most of the things that were happening, so thank you for bringing some of it down. I probably got 60% of what you said, but I appreciate you giving us, in bite-sized terms, some of these things that we know are going on that are awesome. Final question, have you ever heard the Radioactive Rap by Frosty MC and... No.
I have not.
I'm going to send it to you. I think you'll like it. I think you'll like it.
In
your spare time.
And I just want to jump in on that to say, like, we've toured EFRIB. I've also been, I stood where the large animal imaging is in Vet Med. We've been in the Banff facility in Grand Rapids, and I've every time been awe-inspired by these incredible facilities we have, but I've wondered how they're used, and it didn't even occur to me that they could be used in tandem and connection in the way that you are. So I really appreciate hearing how these things are operating on the ground. And also as someone who never met her grandmother because she passed away of ovarian cancer very young, I was especially touched by the example. So thank you for the work that you're doing. And thank you for showing us how you're doing it.
Thank you. And thank you all for your support and for your dedication to MSU. We really appreciate it.
Well, I would just say that we are so glad that you chose to come to Michigan State University.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And so thank you for bringing your research here and being part of the MSU family.
And putting biomedical research here at MSU on the map.
Chair, Hannah has a question.
Okay.
Hi there. I actually have two questions. First off, if the cancer never truly goes away, then can you foresee this being a medicine that people take for the rest of their lives every few weeks?
I don't think it will have to be that at all. The model that I showed you was human tumors growing in a immune-compromised mouse. And we've moved exclusively now to doing these experiments in immune-competent animals that can mount this immune response. So I think once we have a successful immune response, then we won't have to keep treating. But we will keep monitoring. We have to, monitor, and not every person responds the same. So we have to monitor, and then if we do need to give a retreatment, that we can do that.
Second, as a scientist myself, I personally am in need of radioactive isotopes, C-13, for example. I'm a plant scientist, though, so I don't necessarily collaborate with EFRIB on a daily basis. Is there a way that we can access that kind of gas for our studies or anything?
Yeah, there's been a white paper written on all the isotopes that will be available, from the FRIB. Greg Severin wrote that, and that's available. You could check that. Of course, Department of Energy has plans to distribute some of these radioisotopes, and they've invested a lot of money for the hot cells to be able to do the harvesting, and that's coming online next year. So they'll be available from the Department of Energy, too, I think.
At a slightly discounted price?
We hope here that especially the short-lived ones we can get, for a very low price, maybe not even have to pay because of the proximity. So, yeah, and we're interested in a number. I mean, the example I had on the slide, the bromine 76, that's a 16-hour half-life, has similar chemistry to the fluorine 18. We're interested in that because of the longer half-life.
Because carbon 13 gas is $242 a liter. Well, it's cost prohibitive. Thank you.
Any other questions?
Yeah, thank you for the lovely presentation. I was just curious, are there other human or non-human medical applications aside from treating tumors like you had suggested? In general?
Yeah, there are a lot. I mean, neurodegenerative diseases, there's tracers, imaging agents for diagnosis and following, treatments of those diseases. And I mentioned we have a strategy to image waste clearance from the brain with F-18 labeled sorbitol. It's a non-metabolized sugar. We want to look at bulk clearance because we know that defective waste clearance from the brain can lead to protein accumulation and a lot of the tauopathies that happen over many years. So, yeah, it's not just cancer. It's neurosciences and plant sciences, very broadly. They can be used for many different things.
Thank you for your time today.
So just very quickly, really appreciate the multidisciplinary nature of your work and the collaborations. I think you're crossing multiple colleges just looking at the students that are available, and that's something we talk a lot about in the strategic plan at MSU, this ability to take advantage of these facilities but find talented collaborators from all sorts of colleges around. So you and I have had a chance to talk before about your outstanding work, so I won't make any questions or comments about that. But the collaborative nature of it, I think, is so important, so thank you for those efforts.
Awesome. Thank you.
Okay. So, now we're going to move to personnel actions and information reports from Provost Woodruff.
Trustees, I present for approval the items on the June 2022 list of personnel actions. I am pleased to recommend Gerlando F. L. Jackson, Ph.D., as Dean of the College of Education and MSU Foundation Professor, Department of Educational Administration, with tenure effective July 1, 2022. Dr. Jackson is a national leader in higher education and is highly regarded for his academic excellence and commitment to advancing the field of education. I look forward to working with him and supporting his leadership of the College of Education. I am pleased to recommend Mark Largent, PhD, Associate Provost for Undergraduate Education, Dean for Undergraduate Studies, and Professor, Department of History, for reappointment as Dean for Undergraduate Studies, effective June for 2022. I look forward to his continued leadership of undergraduate education at Michigan State University. I am pleased to recommend Teresa Miller, MA, MLIS, Librarian 3, and Associate Dean for Teaching, Learning, and Research Engagement for a title change to Interim Dean, effective July 1, 2022. Ms. Miller's longstanding engagement within and knowledge of MSU's libraries will enable continuity during this time of transition. I am grateful for her willingness to step in to this interim role and for the diverse range of skills she brings to the task. I am pleased to recommend Dylan A.T. Minor, Ph.D., Interim Dean and Professor, Residential College in the Arts and Humanities, for the removal of interim for the appointment of Dean, Residential College in the Arts and Humanities, effective July 1, 2022. Dr. Minor has served as interim dean for the last year, and I am delighted to recommend him as the standing dean with the unanimous support of the Residential College in the Arts and Humanities Faculty Advisory Committee. I look forward to working with him during the next period of transformational growth of the college. The action includes the recommendation of Adam Nightingale, head ice hockey coach, Department of Intercollegiate Athletics, subject to contract with effective dates of May 3, 2022, through May 2, 2027. Additionally, I present the following tenured faculty for appointments. Gerald L. Ballant, Ph.D., Boone and Crockett Club Professor of Wildlife, Department of Fisheries and Wildlife, with tenure effective August 16, 2022. Celeste Campos Castillo, Ph.D., Associate Professor, Department of Media and Information, with tenure effective January 1, 2023. Penteleimon Ekakakis, Ph.D., Professor, Department of Kinesiology, with tenure effective August 1, 2022. Linda Sitali Halgonseth, Associate Professor, Department of Human Development and Family Studies, with tenure effective August 16, 2022. Susan McFarlane, Ph.D., Professor, Department of Advertising and Public Relations, effective August 16, 2022. Spiridila Vazlu, Associate Professor, Department of Kinesiology, with tenure effective August 16, 2022. Finally, I am pleased to share the list of faculty who have been promoted as associate professors with tenure. Please turn your attention to the screen to recognize these outstanding faculty members. Also included in your materials are information reports for academic personnel actions. Included in your information reports are the promotion and tenure awards that are effective July 1, 2022. President Stanley, that concludes my report.
Thank you, Provost Woodruff. Could I have a motion to approve the personnel actions?
So moved.
Thank you. And I heard a second with that as well. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? The personnel actions are approved. We're now going to move to committee reports and other items requiring board approval. Trustee Melanie Foster will now present the Committee on Budget and Finance report.
Thank you, President Stanley. As chairperson of the Trustee Committee on Budget and Finance, I move that the board hereby establishes a fund functioning as an endowment entitled Catherine B. and Floyd W. Miles Endowed Scholarship for Medical Education.
There's a motion. Do I have a second?
Support.
Thank you. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? The motion carries.
As chairperson of the Trustee Committee on Budget and Finance, I move that the board adopts the Michigan State University fiscal year 2022-23 operating budget, including tuition and fee rates for Eli Broad College of Business and College of Engineering undergraduate students for the 2022-23 and 23-24 academic years, and graduate tuition rates for the 2022-23 academic year. Be it further resolved that the administration is directed to implement the Michigan State University fiscal year 2022-23 operating budget as presented.
There's a motion. Can I have a second?
Second.
Discussion.
I'll just have a comment. In terms of what this board does, it does a lot of things on a yearly basis, but approving of the budget on a regular basis is one of the most important things we do. So I'm happy with this budget, and I support it.
And I'd say that the committee, not just the committee, but the board as a whole, has had numerous meetings over the past few months discussing the budget. It's a balanced budget, and that was a challenge, but we got there. And I thank Lisa Frace for her diligent work in working toward this all-funds budget for us.
Any other discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? The motion carries.
As chairperson of the Trustee Committee on Budget and Finance, I move that the board hereby grants a variance to the university zoning ordinance to permit construction within a building setback for an entrance canopy addition to FRIB office tower number 3.
There's a motion. Could I have a second?
Support.
Thank you. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Hearing none, the motion carries.
As chairperson of the Trustee Committee on Budget and Finance, I move that the board hereby authorizes the administration to plan for the project entitled Engineering and Digital Innovation Building.
Motion. Can I have a second?
Support.
Thank you. Any discussion?
Provost Woodruff's going to add some comments after the next resolution.
Okay. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? The motion carries.
As chairperson of the Trustee Committee on Budget and Finance, I move that the board hereby authorizes the administration to plan for the project entitled Plant and Environmental Science Building.
Could I have a second?
Support.
Thank you. Any discussion?
Provost Woodruff.
The authorization to plan today requests approval for a plant and environmental science building and an engineering and digital innovation building. MSU has made people's lives better for 150 years by leveraging its investments and expertise in student experiences, excellence in research, and creating a sustainable future through our strengthening position in AAU and top 100 university rankings, retaining and attracting the best faculty and academic staff by providing space similar to competing institutions, and creating communities through new buildings that bring together multiple programs and colleges, students, faculty, staff, visitors, and industry partners. These two projects are critical components for building on MSU's strength as a globally recognized leader in plant and environmental science, and will lead to new ideas and transformational learning and research in our physical and symbolic gateway to the digital future at MSU. These are bricks and mortar priorities that enable our intellectual capital to be further built and bridge our excellence of the past to an exciting and expectant future.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other discussion on this? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? The motion carries.
As chairperson of the Trustee Committee on Budget and Finance, I move that the board hereby authorizes the administration to proceed with a project entitled Football Complex Renovation and Addition, Phase 2, with a project budget of $67 million.
There's a motion. Can I have a second?
Support.
Thank you. Any discussion?
Yeah. Dan Bowman's prepared to make some comments.
Thank you.
Good morning. This is an important project for the athletic department for not only recruitment but also player development, health, and well-being. It'll add weight rooms, locker rooms, training facilities, a player lounge, and other player amenities. The project's actually under construction. The board approved early construction activities in April, so this resolution would allow us to continue the work so that the primary components of the building could be completed in August of 23 in time for the 23 football season.
And I'd like to add that Coach Tucker and AD Haller have been very diligent in raising funds for this project. The vast majority of funds have already been raised, and the slight gap is going to be a bridge loan to athletics that will be potentially extinguished with the continued support of private donors.
Correct.
So this is vastly a privately funded project.
And I'll just make a quick comment that although it's entitled football building, it actually will benefit a number of other student athletes as well, because the space that's not being used by football will actually, that's currently being used by football, will be repurposed for other sports, and so there will be benefits to other athletes from this.
Absolutely. This will truly benefit the entire athletic department and the entire student athlete program.
And hopefully get me another ring.
You have to talk to Coach Tucker about that.
Any other discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? The motion carries.
This concludes my report.
Thank you. We will now hear from Trustee Diane Byram and the Committee on Academic Affairs.
Thank you, President Sandley. As chairperson of the Trustee Committee on Academic Affairs, I move that the board hereby approves the revisions to policy 04-17-07, emeritus title shown in attachment A.
There's a motion. Can I have a second?
Second.
Thank you. Any discussion? Provost Woodruff, did you want to?
MSU deeply values the years of loyal contribution of its retired faculty and academic staff and considers each of them important continuing members of the institution. The emeritus title awarded to faculty, academic staff, and administrators at time of retirement signals honor and accomplishment. It also provides rights and privileges such as continued participation in academic ceremonies, events, and governance. Bearing the emeritus title is not simply a word on a piece of paper. Rather, it conveys a continued connection to Michigan State University, to academic excellence, and our sustained esteem of the teaching, research, creative, and impactful work of each member of our emeritum community. Last year, the University Committee on Faculty Affairs, working with the Office for Faculty and Academic Staff Affairs, identified a gap in the policy. The current policy doesn't have a gatekeeping mechanism to ensure past misconduct is reviewed and considered when a retiree is awarded the emeritus title. It is automatically conferred to any faculty, academic staff member, or administrator, regardless of their record. This leads to circumstances in which the university's own policy may inadvertently cause harm, particularly to survivors of past misconduct and the reputation of the institution. The UCFA impaneled a subcommittee to propose recommendations to modify the policy. The UCFA endorsed the subcommittee's change, which includes a change to the award process. The change is for a chair, dean, and the Office of Faculty and Academic Staff Affairs to actively review each individual for the granting of emeritum status. The intent behind this change is for the university to infuse trauma-informed practices in its policies by structurally acknowledging and creating pathways to recognize institutional harm to survivors within the emeritus context. Requiring affirmative approval to grant emeritus status will ensure this honorific title takes past misconduct into account. An affirmative process demonstrates the continued dedication and commitment of the university committee to holding itself to the highest ethical standards when awarding the title. The second change with the policy is the title itself. The subcommittee proposed the title to be renamed emeritum. The use of the masculine emeritus has been commonly used in the past as a default to signify he or she. However, the use of the masculine emeritus in a university policy is not only non-inclusive, it's also not necessary. And so we replace the emeritus title with the non-binary emeritum. This is another way for the university to infuse inclusion into MSU's policy. The MSU DEI Steering Committee report and plan was issued in August 2021 and provides a university-wide template for advancing this crucial imperative and as a tool for the university to incorporate best practices in DEI. Indeed, one of the recommendations is to promote DEI in university policies. The proposed change to replace the emeritus title with a non-binary title is more than a change in nomenclature. This change is a step toward increasing equity, inclusion, and belonging through MSU's policies. Policies are foundational structures for an institution and reflect an institution's values and culture. The policy changes were brought forward to the Faculty Senate in April, who overwhelmingly approved these changes. We have also engaged with the Faculty Emeriti Association and have incorporated their feedback into the policy. It has now been brought to the board for their approval. In my first letter to campus, I indicated that we would review all of our policies and procedures through an explicitly anti-racist and anti-sexist lens. This is part of the resulting work of that call to action. On behalf of a grateful university, I thank our Board of Trustees for their affirmation today. The UCFA and its subcommittee, including Allison Berg, Associate Provost, James Madison College, Melanie Helton, Professor, College of Music, and Kara Yermak, Director, Faculty, Office of Faculty and Academic Staff Affairs, as well as Professor Rebecca Campbell and Deputy Chief Andrea Mumford for their trauma-informed perspective, Dr. Jabbar Bennett, Vice President and Chief Diversity Officer for providing equity and inclusion perspective, and I acknowledge and thank Faculty Senate President Karen Kelly Blake for her leadership and partnership. Finally, the university thanks our MSU faculty and academic staff emeriti and the Emeriti Associate Steering Committee and Chairperson, Professor Emeritus Stephen Harsh. MSU continues to be a beacon for best practices in the work we do and the manner in which we do our work. This is one step of many in making MSU the best university for all.
Thank you for your thoughtfulness in combating hegemony with this inclusive language. It's an important step, and I appreciate it.
As do I. Thank you. That work.
Any other discussion? Hearing none, let's take this to vote. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? The motion carries.
Before we move on to the next report, I would like to recognize the provost to talk about another honorific recognition that the university received by way of the president.
I'm honored to announce to the Board of Trustees that Michigan State University President Samuel L. Stanley Jr., MD, was elected to the American Academy of Arts and Sciences, the country's leading and most historic honorary society. President Stanley holds an even more honorific title, that of Professor of the Department of Microbiology and Molecular Genetics at Michigan State University. Since 1780, the American Academy of Arts and Sciences has honored excellence and convened leaders to examine new ideas, address issues of importance to the nation and world, and advance the public good. President Stanley is the 12th MSU scholar and first MSU president to be elected to the Academy. He joins prestigious faculty and leaders from across MSU, including our superluminaries, Richard Linsky, John A. Hanna Distinguished Professor of Microbial Ecology, Evolution, and Population Biology, Guy Bush, John A. Hanna Distinguished Professor of Evolutionary Biology Emeritus, Darlene Clark Hine, John A. Hanna Distinguished Professor of History, and Kay Hollicamp, University Distinguished Professor, Department of Integrative Biology. The university reputation is strong because of the academic work and leadership of our faculty and academic staff and administration. On behalf of a grateful university, congratulations, President Stanley.
Thank you very much.
I just want to echo President Stanley in his opening remarks talked about a recognition the provost just received, but I want to also congratulate the provost for receiving the Distinguished Women in Higher Education Michigan, or the ACE Award, just about 10 days ago. So congratulations on that. And Mr. President, this concludes my report.
Thank you, Chair Bob. We will now hear from Trustee Dan Kelly, the Chair of the Committee on Audit, Risk, and Compliance.
Thank you, President. As Chairperson of the Committee on Audit, Risk, and Compliance, I move that the Board hereby approve the following: a service agreement with Corporation for Digital Scholarship and a grant agreement with Merit Network, Inc.
Thank you. There's a motion. Can I have a second?
Second.
Thank you. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? Any abstentions? The motion carries.
This concludes my report.
Thank you. We will now hear from the Committee on Student Life and Culture, Trustee Scott.
Thank you, President Stanley. The board received an update on the Multicultural Center, and that would have concluded my report. But before I do so, I wanted to acknowledge and welcome our new student liaisons, Belle Letcher, if you want to wave, Stevie Quijas, thank you so much, Joe Kovich, who's not with us today, and then Hannah Jeffrey. So welcome to you all, and we are so excited to get to know each of you in the upcoming year. That concludes my report, President Stanley.
So we will now move to the liaison's report, the chairperson's report, and trustees' comments.
Thank you very much, President Stanley. I want to also welcome our student liaisons. I know that you are beginning your new term, and what will be customary at our meeting starting in September will be we will offer the floor for you to provide comments. We'd like you to keep those to about 2 minutes. I congratulated and thanked our faculty liaisons at our last meeting because I knew that was going to be the conclusion of their presence at our meeting. So thank you very much. We look forward to interacting and working with you over the coming academic year. So congratulations on your appointments too.
Thank you.
For my comments, I want to start by thanking all of our speakers that came and took up their time this morning to talk to the board. I want to specifically acknowledge the Defend Black Voices for your presentation this morning. And I will take a personal liberty here as I speak directly to you, not necessarily on behalf of the entire board, but I understand the impacts of voter suppression and what it means to outcomes of elections. And it comes through lived experiences. So it was 22 years ago, it was the election of 2000, when I was a candidate for Congress in this district right here. The university campus was part of that district. And at the end of the day, there was a tremendous amount of voter suppression that was going on campus to chill the students' ability to vote. And at the end of the day, I lost that election by 113 votes. So that was 22 years ago, and you know, my life has been just fine. However, we are still fighting those same fights today, 22 years later. And I feel very strongly about our democracy is stronger when every eligible voter has a right to vote and have their vote be counted accurately. And so I'm very concerned about the crossroads our country is at right now. We're in troubled times. And so I have a personal commitment to make sure that we encourage every eligible voter to cast their vote. And on a college campus, I think the stakes are even higher because we know if students vote early in life, and get in that habit of being active participants in their democracy, exercising their right to vote, speaking their voice through that process, then they will be lifelong participants in democracy, and our nation, our country, will be stronger because of it. So thank you for your work. We have on campus MSU Votes. We have our student organizations, ASMSU, and all the affinity groups that are interested in making sure that students are active in their in our government and exercise their right to vote. So having said that, thank you for coming today and expressing your showing your voice. The board just got off our retreat, and I believe it was very successful. I want to thank all of my colleagues as well as the president and the administrators that participated. We had, everyone was engaged, they were present, and I believe that we had a very successful retreat. We still have much work to do, but it gave us an opportunity to not only bond a little bit, but to think strategically. Lots of times we are so consumed with the issues of the that particular board meeting or the action agenda items that are before us, that it's kind of nice to take a step back and think very strategically and broadly over the next year to 5 years. And so we really had a chance to do that over the last couple of days when we were together. I want to lend my congratulations to Trustee Vassar on your appointment by the governor for STEM education. We all know how critical that is, and I look forward to you sharing some of the outcomes and what you have learned back with the board and then even the university. So thank you for and congratulations for that. And also Joanne McPherson. Now, Joanne McPherson was someone who was very visible when she was the first lady of MSU. I so appreciate the work she did on Safe Place. And she and Peter gave a $50,000 challenge grant just, I believe it's been in the last 12 months, to make sure that Safe Place continued to be available and strong. And I would only highlight that the family has asked for contributions in Joanne's memory to be made to Safe Place. So if you're inclined to do anything, I would encourage you to contribute to Safe Place. We have, I want to also congratulate our new deans that the provost acknowledged during the personnel action items. Welcome them to the campus as well as all of our new coaches that were also mentioned. We have a retirement, Mary Jo Bales. I don't believe Mary Jo is here, am I right? Okay, she couldn't be here today, so I won't read her resolution, but all of the trustees have signed that resolution. And, you know, Mary Jo got her degree in Communications Arts and Sciences in 1977. And she joined MSU in November 2018, and she was really retired at that time, and she came back to give service to her university at a very important time. And as she's leaving, she's still giving back to the university, and her and her husband, Randy Shajak, they've established an endowment to support the college's strategic communication master's degree program. So I want to acknowledge all of that for Mary Jo. And at this point, I would move that we adopt the resolution in honor of Mary Jo Bales.
Support.
Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? The motion carries.
And before I conclude my report, I just want to say have a great summer. We will all see you back in September, so recharge your batteries, enjoy the sun, and welcome back in September because we'll have a full plate of activities for the coming academic year. So thank you.
Trustee Kelly.
Thank you. So I'll keep my comments short, primarily because you know, we spent 2.5 days together, and I'm tired. I mean, they worked me. But I did enjoy it. I thought it was very productive, the retreat, both from the administration standpoint and the board as well. I echo the chairperson's thoughts with regard to the engagement and the productivity of the retreat. I congratulate Rima on her appointment. And other than that, happy 4th of July and have a good summer. Thank you.
Trustee Foster.
I, too, would like to send my condolences to the McPherson family. As a member of the community here for 30 years, I watched Joanne be the founder and the advocate for Safe Place, and she was very visible. She was very active in the community, and she certainly left her mark here at Michigan State University. On the retirements, Mary Jo Bales, congratulations, and thanks for coming out of retirement to help us. Mike Brand, he brought so much cultural enrichment to our community with hits like Hamilton, Wicked, the list goes on and on, and he certainly left a mark on our community as well. And to Gene Orlando, for his decades of coaching leadership, I've got to hit a few balls with him too, President Stanley, and really, he will be missed. He I believe he had 30 years here at Michigan State University. As we look to the future, I'm very excited about Adam Nightingale coming back to his alma mater and the new direction that the hockey team will be taking. He has a fabulous state-of-the-art facility that Dan Bowman and I just popped in on last week, and it's almost done. And the nice thing about that facility is, again, it's going to be used by many other athletic teams, including field hockey, women's soccer, the list goes on. So it's not just for the hockey program. It's for so many of our Olympic sports. Also, to echo the success of the retreat, this was our first off-site retreat since 2017. And it was very productive. It was very collaborative. And I'd like to thank those who organized it over here, particularly to Eric and Jackie. And I'd like to thank my colleagues, because I think that we had robust participation, and it certainly was a great bonding experience for all of us. And with that, I will conclude. Oh, no, President Stanley. So, I'd just like to thank you for your almost 3 years of leadership. Congratulations on your election to the Academy. And most significant to me is the team of leadership, senior leadership, that you have built here over the past 3 years, because it's impressive, it's outstanding, and it is moving this institution forward. So thank you. That concludes my remarks.
Thank you for that, Melanie. I appreciate that on the leadership team.
Trustee Kanaki Jefferson.
So I will try to keep my remarks short, in part by adopting all of the thank yous that Trustee Foster just shared, because I want to echo and amplify them. I want to draw out, though, the work that the provost has done, and really commend the work that she's done with the faculty. The example of the change to the emeritum policy is really important and profound, and I hope it reflects the effort that is constantly ongoing at this institution to engage in trauma-informed structural improvements that do not impose further burdens or hardships on individuals who have been underrepresented or experienced any trauma here on campus. And so it's extraordinary work to do that, and thank you for it. And I was really pleased that we were able to vote on that. And I hope that your effort to continue to look through a lens of combating any anti-racist, anti-sexist policies that exist here will result in additional opportunities for us to engage in this important reform. So thank you for that. I also want to thank Dr. Birdsall for coming to, she's still here. Yes, thank you, Kate, for coming to share the way you feel the contract negotiations were successful on behalf of our teaching-focused faculty. As the Board of Trustees, we, of course, don't get involved in those negotiations. Often we only hear when things go wrong, and I appreciate you coming to say when things went well, and also your optimism for the future. And so I am glad to hear that you feel visible, valuable, and valued. I'm stealing our provost's words, but it's wonderful to hear that those aren't just words, but they are actually playing out in the lived experience, and I hope that that continues forward, so thank you for that. And then, of course, I'm mindful that this is a week of celebrations, also a week at a time where we may have interesting news about the future of women's rights in this country. But I will say that this is a week of celebrations, both in terms of the anniversary of Title IX. We began by honoring Juneteenth. And I was really moved by the ability to attend the second annual celebration here on campus, something that was really spearheaded and championed by Trustee Scott to have it happen. I was honored to stand with Trustee Vassar to welcome individuals to campus for that. Some of you may know that my husband got his start here at Michigan State. An African-American man came from Texas, knew nobody in Michigan, and it was that education here that would launch him on a path that would return him to the state of Texas to become the first African-American Chief Justice of the Supreme Court of Texas. Michigan State is also a place where my stepson just a few years ago faced a lot of challenges in dealing with the racial issues that remain on this campus. And I take the commitment that we see from Dr. Bennett, from President Stanley and others, and really embodied in the moment we took to celebrate Juneteenth as an acknowledgement of the work we've done, but how much more we need to be doing to realize success in our African-American Spartans, a collective effort to do that. And then, with respect to celebrating Title IX. And this, I'm speaking just as myself, not on behalf of the board, but I will say it is difficult to, and I appreciate the speakers who came to share about their experience and the history of how being female swimmers on this campus empowered them into positions of leadership. As a scholar, I write about this. I have a book, Gender, Power, Law, and Leadership. It has a chapter on the history of Title IX and how we still have so much to do in leadership roles for women in sports, but also how it's so foundational. I am grateful that you took the time to come share the history. You might not have been here when a couple of meetings ago I publicly apologized. It has been concerning to me the way the program was discontinued and how it was communicated. And so I will repeat that apology again in case you didn't hear it from me before. And I just want to say thank you for taking the time to remind us of the very, very important personal history, but also part of our collective history as we think about the future of rights for women and for everyone in this country and at this institution. So thank you.
Trustee O'Keefe.
Thank you. We had the opportunity, as you've heard, to get away from the campus and visit Detroit. And it also gave us the opportunity to see Michigan State's investment in STEM in Detroit. And I really want to salute the collaboration between our Dean of Engineering, Leo Kempo, and our Dean of the Business School, Sanjay Gupta, for, I think, what is going to be truly a spectacular investment in the future. I also, in introducing entrepreneurship to engineering and other disciplines, I think it's a great strategy. And so with that, I'd like to congratulate Teresa Woodruff, our provost, for developing an outstanding team of innovative leaders in education. And congratulations to you on your recent recognition. It was very well deserved. I'd also like to recognize former football coach Mark D'Antonio, who was this past week elected into the National Polish Sports Hall of Fame. Most people wouldn't think of Mark as somebody of Polish descent, and he always had a saying that you must complete your circles, and he attributed that to his Polish mom. Mark, who was usually a man of few words, gave probably one of the best speeches I've ever heard on leadership. It was motivating. And lastly, to the Title IX speakers, it's always a reminder. I mean, having a sister who played softball here in the 70s and understanding, you know, the trials and tribulations of Michigan State being one of the last schools in the Big Ten to recognize women in sports. I know that was always a burr in her saddle, and if I can quote my colleague, Dr. Vassar, nothing changes unless you are intentional. And I think when it comes to Title IX, if we're really going to have changes, we must be intentional. So I thank you for your comments today. Thank you.
Trustee Scott.
Thank you. I'm going to keep my comments short. I wish to congratulate our provost and also our president on their awards, recognitions. They are just outstanding. Individuals who, along with our other administrative staff and fellow trustees, got to spend some time together this weekend. And I really wanted to speak to the retreat, or not the weekend, I'm sorry, but over the last 2 days. And I really wanted to speak to the retreat. I went into the retreat really wanting to bond with our leadership and each other. And I certainly feel that I got more than that out of it. I was extremely proud of the representation of our leadership, what I saw, the passion with which they do their work, the expertise which they hold, the great work that they are all performing here on campus. I mean, it was very awe-inspiring. And quite frankly, when I decided to run as a non-political person for this role, it really was because I wanted to see Michigan State be what I believe that it could be, and to
feel that once I completed my term that I left the university in a better position than it was when I came into this role. And I have to say that with the administration that our president has put together, as well as the leadership and the appointments done by our provost, and all of the executive leadership that goes, I don't want to start naming names because I'm going to forget someone, but you know who you are. We are in really good hands at this university, and I am just so extremely proud of what we are accomplishing and the trajectory in which we are going. I feel that we have some of the best people in leadership here at Michigan State University, and quite frankly, sometimes I feel like I'm not even up to par to be in the same room with some of my colleagues and those that I work with. So I just want the public to know that we may not do everything perfect, but it certainly is not because we are not trying. And we, I believe, are going to be one to watch in the near future. People are going to come back and look at all of the changes that we have made since Larry Nassar, all of the strides that we have made, all of the changes in leadership and the new ideas and the inspiration and everything that we are doing, I think we will be one that people will look at to try to model themselves after in years to come. And I'm just excited about it. And I just kind of reflected on that long bus ride home yesterday about everything that I got to learn. And those that were on the bus know what I'm talking about. It was a really wonderful ride home. I'd also like to acknowledge my colleague, Dr. Vassar, and congratulate her on her appointment. I just believe you are going to provide so much that's needed in that role. And I, as my colleague to the right has stated, am looking forward to hearing back from you on some of the things that you all have accomplished. So congratulations on that. I also wish to extend my condolences to the McPherson family. I did not have the opportunity to get to know Joanne, really. However, I've heard so much about her and her legacy here on this campus. So my condolences to that family. I also wish to talk about, well, I'm not going to because I don't want to be too long, and I feel like I'm already being long-winded. So, two, the Moses Defend Black Voters campaign, you all are doing some remarkable work. I was very happy that Trustee Vassar introduced us to one another, and we had the opportunity to hear from you and the work that you are doing. If there is any further assistance that we can give you, I believe all of us here on this platform feel the same. We have to do what we can to make sure that everyone has the rights to vote, and we certainly want to support you in whatever ways that we can do so. So thank you for the work that you are doing. And then lastly, to those that spoke on behalf of Swim and Dive, I mean, you all are inspiring. Just to hear about some of the things that you endured during the time that you came up through that program, clearly you all are nothing to be messed with. And I think that hearing from the perspectives that you all talked about from are very helpful to people like me that did not, know about all of the obstacles that you faced. And I have so much respect and admiration for you. So thank you for sharing your stories. I just wish everyone a wonderful summer. I hope we all refresh so that we can come back on fire in September. So thank you. That concludes my remarks.
Trustee Tebe.
I just want to first acknowledge Kate. I appreciate you coming today and mostly your leadership. I think what you are doing for our teaching-focused faculty is really important. And I do appreciate that you came to sort of report back on your experience and keeping us abreast of what's going on with the negotiations. And I'm glad to see this time around we did what was right and put our money literally where our mouth was and saying that we value, but actually showing that we value all of you. So just thank you for taking the time this morning to come. I also want to welcome Belle and Stevie and Hannah. I'm really excited to get to know you all over the next year. So thank you for coming on a Friday morning to join us. Appreciate it, and thank you. I also want to acknowledge Dr. Gage, because no offense to my colleagues, but your thoughtfulness in choosing the presentations that you bring to us each meeting, I really appreciate it. It's not something as board members that we get the opportunity very often to get into the weeds like President Stanley and Provost Woodruff do about all of the great research that we're doing on campus. And I just really appreciate you. I can't see you, Doug, there. Appreciate you bringing it to us. Every time I learn so much, and as Dr. Baxter said, half the time I don't understand most of what they're saying, but just I can feel the passion and the inspiration coming from each of you. And so thank you so much for being so thoughtful. I want to acknowledge the swim and dive team members and alumni that were here today. I have my proposal book that I plan on reading this weekend, and I appreciate each of you coming each meeting. I think it's sort of, for those that I've talked to, sort of know where I stand with that. But again, I am only one vote on the board. And I also want to acknowledge the folks from Moses and Defend Black Voters, and I think it would be really great if maybe Kathy or Diane can introduce you to the student groups that are on campus that are also working on voter suppression. And I think having you all collaborate could do really great things on campus. So I'm charging them with making sure that they connect with you guys, because I think that would be really great. And I think our students would really learn a lot from you. And I think it would be important to have you here on campus. So thank you.
Trustee Vassar.
Okay, so you all have me blushing. I didn't even know you knew about that appointment, and I was like, oh, Father, I'm going to cry. Thank you for just acknowledging the accomplishments of all the folks that are, you know, engaged in this work, and thank you for even, you know, acknowledging me. I just appreciate that. I wasn't expecting that, so thank you. I'm excited about that, the work with STEM. The swim and dive folks, I just appreciate your tenacity and your thoroughness. I mean, you come with from all angles. You're just creative, and it's inspiring, as Trustee Kelly said. It's inspiring to see you every time come. I didn't make that decision. It predated me, but certainly as Dr. Birdsall intimated in her talk, I'm part of the problem-solving process. So thank you for helping, giving us all this information and helping us make good decisions. And Dr. Birdsall, thank you for coming and letting us know that there was a good report. Sometimes we don't get those, so it was really nice to have it. And I really just appreciate your idea of continuing the problem solving process in communication, right, in collaboration with one another. I think that's really important at this university. And so that brings me to the spirit of the university, right? I want to thank my fellow colleagues for speaking up on the important issue of the voters' rights that are being eroded every day. And I appreciate you coming and speaking. I know you were nervous, and so I just appreciate you raising your voices. I urge us to analyze this moment. We're in a critical time, right? Black voters showed up in 2020 across the country, and particularly here in Michigan, and we changed the outcome of the election. And as a consequence, extremists are driving an aggressive agenda to make it harder for Black, brown, and working class people to vote. The Secure Michigan Vote effort recently announced that any week now they'll submit the necessary signatures to empower the politicians to pass voter suppression into law over Governor Whitmer's recent veto. So consider what's at stake, not only for Black and working class Michiganders, but for our country, because we know that Michigan is a leader and a perennial swing state. The national outcome has followed the outcome of Michigan in 9 of the 10 last elections, 9 of the 11 last elections, presidential elections. And so going back to 1980, so we know that this is a critical battleground, right? If we allow these extremists and their supporters to make it harder for people to exercise their freedom to vote, the consequences on democracy will be nationwide. This is not a moment to be silent, and MSU is a land-grant institution committed to the freedom of democracy. Our vendors, contractors, relationships must share these fundamental commitments. I look forward to working with my fellow board members to strategize on the right side of history at this critical moment. And I do look forward to working with my fellow board members. This retreat was actually much needed. I appreciate you traveling all the way to Detroit to see all the developments there. I was particularly impressed with the Apple Academy. Knowing that we're the only Apple Academy in the United States is a big deal, and it's in Detroit. There's a lot of great things happening in Detroit, so I welcome you to come. Like I said, I'm going to have this Christmas party, I think. I don't know. I'm getting tired, but I really want to plan this Christmas party. You're all invited, but come to Detroit and see what's happening there and see MSU stamp in that space. I found the retreat invigorating and jovial. I learned a lot about all the folks that I work with daily that I had not known before. So I just appreciate the time to retreat. And I want to encourage us. I think we are, you know, vanguard in this. I think I want to encourage us to do what I always say, take the summer to retreat and relax and rest and rejuvenate and restore and come back revved up for the fights of the fall. We have some big battles. I do want to say that I owe President Stanley a public apology. In getting to know him during the retreat, I realized that he has a little bit more cool than I thought. Now, I was surprised, like shocked. I wasn't ready. And he's cooler than some of the people, I won't name you, but there's cooler than some of the people that you would think are cool. So I was shocked, and I apologize, because all this time I was like, But now I see that I was wrong. And so I owe you this apology. You are way cooler, cooler than I thought. Let me not give you too much, but cooler than I thought. So I appreciated that time to relax. And so thank you so much for coming and to Detroit and taking the time to get to know each other and to relate. And I just encourage you all to just make this summer a sizzler. We haven't had, we're out in the atmosphere, we're maskless, we're out here. Still use your hand sanitizer. But while you're out here, have a great time. I mean, blow this summer out and come back rejuvenated and refreshed. Thank you so much for everything you all have done this year. This is the end of my first full actual year? I've been here 18 months. So I've been really, really appreciating the work, and I continue to appreciate this work with you all.
I have one more comment. I just wanted to thank Eric and Jackie as well for the organization of the retreat. Someone may have said it, but, you know, from the time we walked, you know, into the hotel, even getting on the bus with the snack, we didn't have snacks, but that was Melanie's fault on the way there, but we had snacks on the way back. And so from start to finish, I just want you all to be acknowledged and just thank you for the time and effort to get everything coordinated. It was awesome. Well, so thank you.
Dr. Beauchamp had driven us with his. We would have had snacks. Yeah. Next time he's driving.
Yeah. So I think that concludes this. Yes. Do I hear a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Second? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Meeting is adjourned.